The Body Love Binge is the podcast for you if you're so done with living in the hellhole of an eating disorder, hating your body and constantly wishing you were thinner. If you're truly ready to heal from anorexia, bulimia or binge eating disorder and genuinely make friends with your body, then you're in the right place. I'm your host, Victoria Kleinsman, a food freedom and body love coach, eating disorder and abuse survivor, who's on an absolute mission to love and support millions of women to come back home to self-love and intuition eating. If it's possible for me, I know it's possible for you as well. Thank you so much for being here. I'll see you in the episode. Hi, Queens. I have a guest with me today, and I'm really excited about this guest, actually. Not that I'm not excited about all the other guests, but this one particularly, and you'll see why. So I'm going to read Sarah's bio to you. Apologies in advance if I say the word wrong, because I'm sure you get this all the time, Sarah, but I'm going to do my best. So Sarah King is a health at every size exercise psychologist and health coach who uses science and her own personal journey to empower other women to develop a positive relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. Through her podcast, courses, online personal training, and coaching programs, she helps women regain their periods. Oh, that was the better word. I was looking for hypothalamic anuria. Well, I'm sure Sarah will go into that. She helps women regain her periods, find food freedom, have a healthy relationship with exercise, all while gaining body confidence. Her main mission is to help you unlearn everything about diet culture so you can create a life that feels good on the inside, not one that just looks good on the outside. So without further ado, Sarah, welcome to the Body Love Binge podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have this talk with you.
Can you start off by saying the word properly, please?
You were very close. It is a mouthful. So hypothalamic amenorrhea.
And that means loss of period.
Yes. So I'm sure we'll go into the definition, but that is one cause of losing your period.
Okay, great. So we are absolutely going to go into that. But before we do, I have 10 fun, quick fire questions for you, if you're ready.
Okay. All ready to go.
Number one, your favorite food.
My favorite food, that would have to be like avocado and eggs on toast. I know it's not one food, but like that's probably my favorite meal.
Yeah, I love that. Number two, sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise. I am an early bird. I live next to the beach and I love getting up early and, you know, taking the day.
Wow. Whereabouts are you from? Where do you live?
So I live in Bondi Beach in Sydney. I'm originally from America though. So I only moved to Australia as a teenager.
Oh, wow. Number three, I kind of know the answer already to this one. Dogs or cats?
Dogs. I have a very cute little dog that you might hear potentially bark in the background at some stage. And I grew up with dogs. I love dogs. Not that I don't like cats. I just prefer.
Yes, me too.
Dogs.
Number four, hot or cold, whatever that means to you.
Hot.
Number five, describe yourself in three words.
Ambitious. Loyal. And adventurous.
Love. Number six, if you were to become president or prime minister tomorrow, what would you change first?
What a great question. I think I would change a lot about, I guess, our education systems. I think that there are a lot of people that don't thrive in the way that our education systems are set up. And there's probably a lot of things that we should be learning about that we don't. So the environment.
On that one.
Yeah. 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 So just, I think I would change things about the education system.
Okay. Number seven, what does self-love mean to you? If you were to describe self-love to an alien, how would you describe it?
Self-love to me means taking the best care of myself, even on the days that I don't feel my best.
Number 8, two words to describe how you feel during your menstrual cycle, the bleed.
Ooh, two words. The first one that kind of comes to mind is like refreshed.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is a little bit fatigued.
Love these. Number 9, do you have a pet hate? If so, what is it?
I do. Slow walkers.
I was thinking of that.
People, I often see lots of, where I live, there's a lot of tourists. And you kind of notice, I guess, whatever side of the road you kind of drive on is like the side of the sidewalk people walk on. But like when people come from a country where it's the opposite, you often have these like social norms where people are a bit all over the place. And you often find that the slow walkers are the ones that get in the way the most.
You can totally tell, can't you, from the, I mean, I don't live in like a resort where people would come and stay, but the local from the non-locals,
yeah,
they stand out 100%. Like a sore thumb. Especially yes, when I'm also a tourist, like taking photos of everything everywhere. And then the locals are probably like, oh, yeah, there we go. There's another tourist on my beach.
Yeah.
Right. Number 10, last one. If you could have dinner or spend time with someone who was dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh, my grandmother. I miss her. She's an extraordinary lady.
Love that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah, for answering those. Let's go into the main juice of the questions. Why are you doing what you do? Can you share your own story with, I'm going to say HA, because that's like way easier for me.
Yeah. So I guess why I do what I do will probably make sense when you hear a little bit about my story. So I have recovered from both an eating disorder and hypothalamic amenorrhea. And they both took a very long time to resolve. I guess the first thing that I tackled was my eating disorder. And that was the thing that was most impacting my life. And I went through a lot of different kinds of treatment to figure out what was going to be, or eventually what led me to, the most effective form of treatment, which ended up being an intensive outpatient program that I did. And then continued on beyond that, kind of like with a little bit of outpatient care, but got to a stage where I was like, I'm pretty good. I feel really comfortable around food. I felt really balanced with exercise. I felt very comfortable with my body and the fact that, you know, I had accepted that it had changed. But the thing that was lingering, even though I had quote unquote reached my recovered weight, or the weight that, you know, my doctors had said was necessary, and I felt fine at, my periods were still missing. And my period first went missing, I guess, even before I had any form of disordered eating or exercise, when I first went to university. So I remember the first year, the exam time came around and I was like so stressed and just like studying and trying to adapt to university life. And my periods went missing. And I remember telling my mom, she's like, oh, it can happen if you're stressed. Went to the doctor. They said the same thing. And then they just stayed gone. They just were completely MIA. And at the time now that I look back on it, I was very stressed. And I saw a psychologist who worked at the university at the time, who said, if you're really stressed and your mood is low, then you should definitely exercise, because exercise will help you. So now looking back, I realized that that time of my life coincided with me going to the gym more and kind of starting exercise, and not from like any kind of negative or driven place, just because I thought it would help me. Mm-hmm. And in a way it kind of did, but then my eating disorder developed and it all kind of spiraled. So I was still a bit dumbfounded once I'd gotten back to my weight that everyone said I should be at, and I wasn't exercising excessively. Why my periods were gone. And I went to so many doctors and specialists who said, oh, it's this or it's that, or take the pill. It's probably PCOS, like keep doing what you're doing. And it wasn't until a few years on that I went to this talk with a dietitian, and it was actually run by one of the gyms that I went to. And this dietitian had written a book, and she started speaking about her own story of losing a period and all the symptoms that she had had. And then she said this word, hypothalamic amenorrhea. And I was like, oh my God, that this is what I have. And so from that moment onwards, I bought her book and I, you know, searched the internet for all of the things on how to recover. And at the time there were like absolutely not that many resources. There was like one book, one Facebook page, a couple of blogs, but there was so much stigma and taboo kind of like talking about periods. And so I kind of felt like, you know, I stumbled my way through the initial process before I went and got some help and some support with my own recovery journey. And I ended up joining a group program, which was life-changing. So it was run by the dietitian that wrote that book that very fortuitous day. And I felt so connected to the women, even though we had to be so vulnerable with each other and make all of these incredible changes to regain our cycle. It's ultimately what helped me get my life back. And so why I do what I do today is because I want to remove the stigma around missing periods. But more than that, I want people to know that they are never alone in this journey to recovering their cycle and to finding more freedom around food and to allowing their body to be as it needs to be to function optimally. And that actually, if you get support, if you are there with others going on the same journey, it is so much less stressful. And you come out the other side with a group of amazing connections from around the world and so many tools and skills that are actually transferable to so many other areas of your life, along with, you can hear my little dog barking.
I can hear, say hi.
Along with obviously having a healthy, regular menstrual cycle.
Wow. What a beautiful story. And thank you for sharing, Sarah. I would like to go back and ask you a few questions around your story before we go into your recovery of your period again. The thing that stuck out to me was the weight that the outpatient doctors and professionals were aiming for you and then told you that that's your recovery weight. Was that your recovery weight? Was you still underweight for you? Because this is a big thing in professional treatment that I see a lot.
Yeah. So a lot of times when, I guess, treatment centers take you in or they ask you about your quote unquote pre-morbid weight. Mm-hmm. So the weight that you were at before you became unwell, that's normally the weight that they encourage you to go back towards to be quote unquote, I guess, recovered or physically stable or healthy, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem being sometimes people live with an eating disorder or disordered eating for several years that transcends significant periods of change in a person's life and body. Yeah. So, you know, you're not supposed to be the same body size as when you were a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And in your 30s, you're not supposed to be the same body type as you were in your early 20s. And it is so hard to kind of give someone a number and so unhelpful. On the one hand, it gives you something to move towards, but on the second hand, it can be a bit of a ceiling that creates the, oh, I don't need to go above this.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. And so my discharge weight was a weight that was still too low for me.
Yeah. I had the same experience because I started dieting when I was 9. So I had no freaking clue what my adult being 25 or over when we're fully developed and matured as a woman, I had no clue what my natural set point weight was because I'd fucked with my food since I was 9. So that's really challenging, isn't it? And so many people can be, quote, in a healthy BMI range, but be so underweight for them. And that was what happened to me. So with regards to that and you finding this group and this woman, And then that's how you got your period back. What did you do? What was different compared to what you were already doing in recovery from the eating disorder?
So I guess when I had reached recovery from my eating disorder, I just maintained those kind of lifestyle behaviors. So I was eating regularly. I wasn't going to the gym too much, but I was doing like higher intensity exercise and higher intensity training. Never fasted, never every day, but I was definitely still doing it. And I was just eating enough to just maintain the body size that I had. And I had been encouraged to kind of move towards intuitive eating. So, you know, listen to your hunger, you can stop when you fall, all of those kinds of things. But when I realized that my periods going missing from hypothalamic amenorrhea were a result of a few factors. Number one, probably not having quite enough energy to cover the costs of the high intensity exercise. And also the fact that I had an active job. So I was a Pilates instructor and working as an exercise professional at a gym and at a few like different hospitals at the time. So I think I just didn't realize how much energy my body needed. And then if I'm being really honest with myself, I probably still had a few little lingering like fears around food that I definitely need to nip in the bud. So what I needed to change was I had to give my body so much more energy. So that looked like eating not just a bigger volume of food, but being very conscious about making sure that there was enough energy in all of the foods that I was consuming. And one of the things that I probably, you know, I think we have probably all have this like collective trauma around like the low carb era. And you being always told, like, you know, when I got misdiagnosed with PCOS, all of those different times, I got told that carbohydrates was something that I needed to be mindful of and, you know, not to overconsume them. And actually the reverse was true. My body needed plenty of carbohydrates to be well fueled and for my body to receive kind of the signals that everything was safe and abundant and that it could prioritize producing hormones for a menstrual cycle. So enough energy was definitely one. It had to be enough energy to obviously allow my body to reach a more optimal weight that it felt more comfortable at. So a lot of times it meant eating when I wasn't necessarily hungry and even when I still felt quite full. And then I obviously had to change my exercise as well. So no more high intensity. I really slowed things down to just like a gentle walk, you know, really light weights. At the time, unfortunately, I had a car accident, you know, a few months into my recovery, which although I think that was a very difficult journey in itself for me, really forced me to slow down in a way that I'm not sure I would have necessarily done had I not been in kind of a lot of pain.
Yeah.
So I went from doing all the things to doing not much of anything because everything hurt. And in a way, it forced me to learn that I was okay to rest and that I could cope in different ways. And that stress management side was the third thing that I really had to work on to restore my cycles.
Wow. How did you know? So I was going to ask you this, but you kind of spoke to it already. When you were eating and fueling yourself more and you weren't necessarily hungry, how did you know what to fuel yourself with when perhaps your intuitive eating muscle was actually like, nah, I've had enough? Was it saying you'd had enough, or was it the fear from the eating disorder? Like, how can you help us to navigate that part if someone's in the same boat as you that thinks they're eating intuitively, but their period still isn't there?
So I think the really difficult thing is knowing when intuitive eating is helpful and when it's not helpful. And this isn't something that I was taught when I was in recovery. Now I've done my intuitive eating counselor training and, you know, I'm very well equipped with all of this knowledge that I wish I had before. But if you actually don't have your periods, it means that your body's not going to give you reliable physiological cues. because it doesn't have enough energy to optimally function across a lot of different bodily systems. If it doesn't have the energy to prioritize the hormones being produced for your menstrual cycle, it's not going to produce adequate amounts of your hunger and fullness hormones, or it might produce some, but you know, they're all a little bit skewed. So actually, for anyone that has a missing period because of hypothalamic amenorrhea, it's not actually helpful to use hunger and fullness as pure markers of when to eat or to stop eating. But for anyone that has regular menstrual cycles and their health is optimal, then using that as part of the intuitive eating practices, because intuitive eating is not the quote unquote hunger and fullness diet, can be really, really useful. So if you're someone that's like navigating a recovery journey, but you know that your body's probably not where it needs to be, you know, functioning optimally, or you're really struggling with kind of still overcoming food rules and food fears, then that mechanical eating is absolutely so vital at this particular stage of your journey of recovery. And you can practice other aspects of intuitive eating, and the hunger and fullness side of things will come later, because there are only two aspects of intuitive eating, and we can work on so many others, like mindful eating and, you know, rejecting the food police and body respect. So it's really just about teasing out that there are different times for different things.
Yeah. It's interesting that when you shared your story about the doctors perhaps saying if you had PCOS to be, quote, mindful of the carbs, that's not even mindful eating. That's hilarious. So mindful eating is not purposely so you eat less. Mindful eating is being in the present moment with food and enjoying all of it and tuning into your body as you're doing so. So just wanted to speak to that, because it does kind of, I want to say annoy me, but I guess it does annoy me when people are talking like, be mindful with your carbs or be mindful with this and that. And it's like, you don't even know, you're not even using the right word with what you're saying. I mean, you're sharing restriction, which is never the answer, but that's not what mindful eating is anyway. So just wanted to speak to that.
And I think it's such a sneaky way that diet culture can kind of often create this disguise around it being like a healthy way to approach your relationship with food, when actually it is that restriction in disguise, like, oh, just like be cautious around this or that. You're like, actually, where is that coming from?
Exactly. Okay, so I would like to go into stress with HA, because it doesn't only, it's a combination of things. You've mentioned three things: stress, exercising too much, and not eating enough. How much of an impact does stress have on period? And before I allow you to answer that, I had someone message me a couple of months ago, a mother who was, the daughter was, I think, 14, 15, that she was asking about. And her daughter had been diagnosed from the doctor with binge eating disorder, and she'd lost her period. And the doctor suggested just going on the pill. Unfortunately, that's what most doctors do. And she asked me about it. And I said, well, I'm not a professional in HA. However, stress is a huge part of that. And so your daughter's probably so much in a stress response because of the binge eating and the shame and the body image and all of that, that that can create the period to stop. So can you talk to it why that might happen with stress? If someone was, quote, a healthy weight for themselves, why would they perhaps stop from stress alone without the exercise and the restriction?
Yeah. So you make such a good point, because when we're talking about the menstrual cycle disappearing, obviously under eating or over exercising, that creates an element of physical stress on your body. However, your body can't differentiate between that and psychological stress, because the hormonal signaling is so similar when you are experiencing psychological stress, whether that be as a result of experiencing anxiety, depression, another mental illness like an eating disorder, whether that be the pressure from school or work or relationships or finances. And it can also be the pressures that we place upon ourselves in terms of the standards that we feel that we need to uphold, perfectionism, black and white thinking, all or nothing mentalities. All of those are sources of stress that our body can sense. And when that happens, there's a hormonal signaling kind of pathway that means our body is producing more stress hormones. And when that happens, it has a really difficult time producing sex hormones at the same time because they kind of compete for the energy to be produced and made along the pathways that they're going down. So that is why simply being too stressed can lead to your periods going absent. And this is sometimes why when people experience like significant illness, or they go through a really significant change in their life, or they're under a lot of duress, stress, that their bodies can shut down their menstrual cycle. So they can get a little bit irregular or wonky. And that is just one piece of really, really good evidence of how sensitive our bodies can be to stress in our lives.
Yeah. And what about exercise? If someone's listening and they're in recovery or they think they're perhaps recovered, because unfortunately I see a lot of people who are in quasi recovery who think they're recovered and that they're still listening to food rules, and that's not freedom, if you ask me. You can be fully recovered. If someone's listening to this and they've not got their period back and they're exercising because they enjoy it and they're not doing it from an obsessive place to control their body, if they're doing HIIT and that type of exercise, what would you recommend for someone who is in a healthy mindset around exercise but still hasn't got their period back?
Yeah, and this is such a tricky one because, as we know, movement has so many benefits to both, you know, our physical health and our mental and emotional health as well. And as a health professional, I hate taking things away from people who have spent a really like significant period of time building up a healthy relationship with those things. And so one of the things I often say is it's never for forever. And it is an element of sacrifice. And we're not doing it just for fun. There is a point to this. And it doesn't mean that your body won't be able to tolerate high intensity exercise later down the track. It just means at this moment in time, it's not going to be the best form of exercise for you because high intensity exercise, similar to forms of, I guess, really high psychological stress, puts the body under significant stress and creates like a rise in cortisol that would be much more significant than if we were doing something like low to moderate intensity, and also has that element of having significant energy expenditure as well.
Yeah.
So it's kind of this perfect storm of being a very unhelpful form of exercise, like I said, at that moment in time during your recovery from hypothalamic amenorrhea. So working on initially like swapping it to something that is a gentler form of exercise would be a really good first step. So more restorative yoga, like a Pilates class that isn't like a HIIT Pilates class, but more like a classical Pilates or like a very mindful reformer class, or just, you know, going for a walk, doing something like social and fun with your friends, but maybe it doesn't have as much structure. So maybe you like randomly decide on the weekend to just go hit a few tennis balls, but it's nothing that vigorous, has that element of social connection though. Mm-hmm. Those would be helpful alternative forms of movement that you can do. And you also get the opportunity to kind of like take a break, try something different, and maybe actually feel like you can find something new that you like just as much that you might keep in your rotation of different forms of exercise that you do when you maybe reincorporate high intensity exercise back again once your periods are regular.
Yeah, I noticed for myself that a bit like you, when you had that unfortunate car accident and it forced you to rest, I used to keep getting injured because I would like nail the hit. I did way too much, but I enjoyed it. So I just kind of ignored it. This was only a couple of years ago. And every time I got injured, it forced me to rest. And the most recent time was only just before my wedding this May. I got injured again, literally 2 weeks before my wedding, and I couldn't walk. And they were like, we don't know if you can walk down the aisle or not. And that was a big eye opener to me. So since then, I only do HIIT once a week, and I have so much more energy. I have so much more strength. So I do a bit more weight training, but I have so many more rest days. And that's the best thing I've ever done for myself and my health and my fitness, actually, by actually doing less.
Yeah. And I think that's often what's really difficult, as you can see that it's been marketed and I guess promoted as this, if you can do a little bit and a little bit has these kinds of amazing results, then a lot will have even more benefits. Yeah. But actually for most people, high intensity exercise is something that should be sprinkled in. It is a very taxing form of exercise on the body. So even though it does have significant benefits, the recovery period in between when you're doing your HIIT workouts, it's actually a little bit longer, because when you are doing a workout, that's not actually when you're getting stronger. That is when you are putting your body under stress. It's the time in between where your body adapts. And if you give your body enough time to replenish itself and you give it the adequate nutrition and rest, then you'll come back to your next session stronger, feeling good, ready to go. But if you give yourself not quite enough time, not quite enough energy, not quite enough rest, you can actually come into your next session starting off at a lower point. And so what you end up doing over time is kind of dwindling down your body's capacity instead of what we want to do, which is build it back up.
Yeah. And joints as well. So because I did that for so many years, keep showing up as I was being broken down, like internally with my joints and muscles and all of that. Now I just don't do tuck jumps. I just don't do box jumps because it doesn't feel nourishing to my body at all. It feels like quite traumatic actually, because of all the over, you know, jarring and overuse of my joints and muscles. And, you know, I'm still young. I'm 36 though. So I have noticed a difference. So those of the listeners that are listening, I have a range from teenagers to, you know, 60s plus. And you said a key point, Sarah, earlier on in this episode, your body is not supposed to be the same as when you were a teenager, as when you're in your 20s, as when you're in your 30s. And surrendering and accepting that and just loving growing into, you know, a more mature woman as we get older, what a gift to grow old. And letting go of what you used to be and just stepping into a new and honoring your body, I think that's really key to mention, because so many of us have this past experience of fitness level, for example, or strength level, even if it has nothing to do with physical appearance, we can tend to get attached to, I want to be as fit as I was at this date, but your body's forever changing. And so are you as a woman. So let's just let go of that and just focus on the now.
Yeah, you make such a good point there, because, you know, our bodies have different levels of capacity depending on our stage of life. Mm-hmm. And I see this so frequently with, I guess, women that I help in that kind of perimenopause, menopause stage, who were like, oh, but I used to do this amount of exercise and I used to be this and this fitness and all of this kind of stuff. And they're experiencing, like, you know, they're trying to upkeep that same regimen, but actually not understanding that their body actually requires different things now, and it requires different timings for recovery. Mm-hmm. And to get similar benefits, it's actually about doing less in a more thoughtful way and providing your body with, like I said before, you know, train hard, but you're recovering even harder so that you're feeling all of the benefits of the kinds of training and exercise and movement that you are doing. And that's when you actually feel so much better in your body and in your life, because your energy levels are stable. You never feel depleted from your workouts. It's adding to your life and not taking away from it.
Less is more. took me 36 years to grasp that. Well, 35, but you know, I'm there now. Better late than never.
Exactly. So
I would love to go into what obstacles can people face in overcoming HA? What typically maybe have you experienced or that you support your clients through that can be probably challenging?
I think the first big challenge is the radical acceptance that things need to be different and to change, and that those changes aren't necessarily something that you're just doing for a short period of time and then you can do a 180 and go back to all of the habits that you were doing before when your period was missing. These are changes that need to be made and to kind of stay in your life longer term. So if you want a period to remain regular, you're always going to have to be prioritizing fueling your body, and you're always going to have to prioritize training with recovery and rest, and you're always going to have to prioritize not putting too much on your plate so that you don't burn yourself out or become overly stressed. And that can be, I guess, a lot to think about in terms of all of those different layers of change. And some might be more nerve-wracking for some people than the other. So some might be really nervous around the food changes, some might be really nervous around the exercise changes. I find the one that is probably the biggest obstacle for people is the potential body changes that may happen. So being really, really nervous and not really having that crystal ball to say, I'm willing to do this, but only if I know what my body that I recover into looks like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, wouldn't we all love to have a vision of what our future looks like? But that is just not possible. So it's stepping into this unknown and being okay with the fact that your body might be different, but that different isn't necessarily a bad thing. Not all weight gain is quote unquote bad or unhealthy. And on the flip side, you know, not all weight loss is quote unquote good or healthy. So body changes and working on your body image, I find, is absolutely critical to the recovery process, because you need to get to the end and be okay with respecting your body, even if it looks and feels different to you, even if it's uncomfortable to be in some days, knowing that it still deserves care, attention, love, support, kindness, and being able to give it those things, even in the face of feeling really uncomfortable on some days. So I would say those are the biggest obstacles people face. And then obviously what often happens when you go through these big periods of change is all the feelings that come up as a result. So being well equipped with good coping skills for your emotional well-being is essential. If you don't have those, it's going to be so, I guess you're going to have so many more urges to run back to old behaviors, which might provide your brain an element of safety and of knownness that it really craves. So having that good, like, emotional well-being and those good coping skills will ensure that you can maintain the changes necessary for recovering your period.
Yeah, wow. I'm so happy you've spoken to that, because so many of my clients, and I did too, had this innate fear of a few, actually, I'd like to speak to something else in a minute, but the innate fear of what's it going to be like if I can just see what size I'm going to end up at least that's still control, isn't it? Trying to grasp something that we know to try and be okay with it, but it's just walking into the unknown. And then here's the word again, letting go, because I've had to let go of my preference for a leaner body. I still prefer my body leaner, but I have traded a leaner body for food freedom, emotional freedom, innate happiness, acceptance, and self-love. So you have to think about that. There's no, you have to let go of something in order to attain something else. It's just the way life works. And it's everything has a trade-off, doesn't it? So if I were to try to be lean again, which I never would, by the way, I would be trading food freedom. I would be going back to restriction and all the stuff that I've lived with for over 20 years. No, thank you. it's letting go of that body that you desire and learning how to be okay with that. And then eventually not even caring, like it doesn't matter to you anymore. You get to live a life and move your body in ways that feel good, regardless of whether you have abs or less cellulite or whatever it is. And that's freedom to me.
Yeah. And I always say to my clients, and I found this like a really liberating thing to remind myself of, was letting go of the fact that I wasn't letting myself go. I wasn't doing that at all, but I was letting myself be. I was letting myself be in the truest sense of the word, because I could be free around food. I could be in my body and sense what kind of exercise would be nourishing for that particular day. I could be with my friends. I could be with my family. And I could be present. I couldn't do any of those things when I was hyper fixated on controlling the way that my body looked.
Yeah.
So, you know, letting go of the notion that you're not letting yourself go, but you're really just letting yourself be as you need to in order to have the life that feels so fulfilling.
Yes. A quote from Tabitha Farrar, which was one of my go-tos, was, or still is, strong, authentic women do not suppress their natural body size. And I had that on repeat, and that really helped me. But what I would like to speak to, Sarah, is some clients, and maybe you've had this too, when they get their period back, when people are saying, oh, you look so well, that is, and I experience this as well, that's like a massive insult in a way. It's like, oh, wait, I'm not sick anymore. And all the fears come up of like, I'm not going to be taken care of. People are going to think I'm fine. There's that kind of strange feeling that you want to be sick. Can you speak to that?
I can. I think there's a huge identity piece that comes with having disordered eating, an eating disorder, or hypothalamic amenorrhea. Whether we recognize it in the moment or potentially not, it is something that affects some, not all people. But it's this idea of, if I don't have this thing, how am I defining myself? How do other people see me? Will I still matter? What will people, you know, think of me as now? I used to be the quote unquote fit one, or the really healthy eater, or the one that was working on getting their periods back. And, you know, that created a line of conversation and care and insight and connection. And now that that's not there, like, what are we going to talk about? How are we going to stay connected? Like, who am I going to be? And so there is this really strong process that I think sometimes definitely needs to happen, which is like grieving the loss of that identity and that part of you, so that you can connect so much more to the new you. And it can be both extremely liberating to kind of go, I have all of this brain space and capacity for other things in my life, and also terrifying, because you're like, I have no idea who I am or what this is anymore, or whether I still am going to get the same care, attention, love from other people. So in that respect, it is that stage of grief and loss that we often have to go through. And at the same time, really challenging those assumptions that we might have around that identity that no longer serves us, and connecting to the identity that we want to serve us, and building evidence that we're still cared for, we still matter, we, you know, have passions and roles and all of these things. And that takes time. We have so much more evidence potentially around the identity that we held as a person, you know, as ourselves, but also as a person that had disordered eating and eating disorder or hypothalamic amenorrhea. And we just have a lot less evidence for this new version of ourselves that we have to work on building up. And that takes a little bit of time and a little bit of awareness. But when we do, we can see, hey, actually, a lot of my fears are really, really unfounded.
I love that. So everything what you've said, thank you. One last question. I'm curious if you can speak to this or not. Not everyone loses their period, even in the depth of anorexia. Why do you think that is?
So we definitely know that there is a genetic element to hypothalamic amenorrhea, which just means that some people's genes will prevent them from ever losing a period despite this change in energy balance and stress. Mm. Now, while some people might look at that and go, quote unquote, they're so lucky, we need to know that a period or no period does not define severity of eating disorders or disordered eating. Mm. And that some people who experience period loss, yes, do have struggles with their relationship with food and their relationship with exercise. But it also happens to people fairly unintentionally because they're just unaware of their energy needs, mm-hmm. or they simply, you know, didn't think about how much they were doing in a day or in a week, and they were so busy they didn't make time to eat. And it is really important to kind of go, whatever the reason that your period is missing, or even if your periods are there but you know you're really struggling with your relationship with food or exercise or your body, however that is impacting you, you are always deserving of help and support. If you ever have the question cross your mind, oh, I'm not that bad. Mm. Probably do need the help and support. Or if you're questioning, oh, I don't really know if I'm as bad as everyone else to need help, it's more likely that you probably do. Whenever you're having those questions, it's just a little bit of a checkpoint that, hey, I'm thinking about these things quite a bit. And if I'm thinking about these things quite a bit, that's probably overruling other areas of my life and it's time to get some help.
Yeah, you are sick enough. That's what, you know, people say. I don't think I'm sick enough because I've not lost my period, or I'm not underweight, or I'm not purging, or I'm still binging. So therefore I'm not sick enough. Like, if it's affecting your life in a negative way, you are sick enough to get help. So don't struggle alone.
100%. You need that help, support, and you deserve it.
Yeah. Amen. How can people work with you, Sarah, and how can they find you and all of that good stuff?
So how you can find me is through my name on pretty much all social media platforms. So at Sarah Liz King, and I'm on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And my website is the same, sarahlizking.com, where I offer one-to-one coaching for both eating disorder, disordered eating, and hypothalamic amenorrhea recovery, as well as group program support. We love our community. And we also offer online personal training for those who are looking to have a really healthy relationship with exercise. They want to have fun moving their bodies, and they just want a bit of guidance and support on doing that.
Amazing, Sarah. Thank you so much. And are you active in your DMs if people want to reach out to you? Would you have support with that?
I am active in my DMs. You can always send me a message and I will aim to check and get back to you as soon as I can.
Well, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom, Sarah. I'm sure you've helped so many and I've learned a ton as well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's been a great chat.
Welcome, and see you next week, my queens. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share, subscribe, and leave me a 5-star review. Your support means the absolute world to me, and it really does help me to get my podcast out there for those that need it. Thank you.